Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the My Life, Your Life Together podcast. This is Zach, joined by Zach Jenkins and Joe Vogt once again. And now we're going to be diving into Zach Jenkins' history of education and employment and how he ended up where he is, if he's happy he ended up where he is, and why he is so happy he ended up where he is. Because, I mean, he's at a table talking on a podcast with me. So what's not to
There's
be happy
no
about?
Other place I'd rather be.
Exactly. No other place. And for those of you who are wondering, the end of last episode ended with Joe looking to buy some merch. He has succeeded.
I have.
Yes.
Did you find the hoodie that you were looking for?
I did. I think everything in my life thus far will be brought to fruition with this hoodie.
That's powerful.
That's profound.
Is so powerful.
My life, your life.
Together.
Yo, that was good.
And we're done.
And the beginning of last episode, you know, you don't have to listen to these in order. I would kind of recommend it because the beginning of last episode, we did touch on kind of a little bit of our educational background. Specifically, Zach did talk about his educational background as being homeschooled, but still being immersed into society so he could have
I wasn't completely like the weird kid that doesn't know how to talk to people.
Exactly. And everything I know about Zach leads me to believe that he's had less jobs than Joe has. I don't know if that's true, though.
But so many jobs.
Probably about the
same.
The same.
Okay.
But some of them were concurrent
okay.
at the same time.
That's a big word.
He has education.
And we did. He does have that edumacation.
I dropped out of college twice.
That's
next level. That's like next level achievement.
That is next level. You're just like.
Although, well, we'll get into
we'll
it.
We'll get into it.
I'll explain.
So the only jobs that I know you had, and I don't even know if this was like a paid job or even if it was a job, is security at IHOP.
Yep. Okay,
not the Pancake House, International House of Prayer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking pancakes. I'm like, wow, like I don't understand.
That IHOP in El Paso's taking it serious.
For real, in Kansas City, there are personal security guards at some IHOPs, specifically the one in Grandview at Truman Corners, which I don't think is even an IHOP anymore. But they had a private security guard in there because
they kept getting burgled.
Kansas City's a rough area. There's some... But anyways, go ahead.
Anyways, so I was going to say, security at IHOP, law enforcement officer in Kansas City, and now in New York, some type of tradesman, which I don't know exactly what. So this is where you get to tell us all about when you decided you wanted to do what you do and what you did and what you will do.
And why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And how long you've been doing it.
Yeah, and to what extent you do it.
And to how well I do it.
No, we don't care about that.
Yeah, mediocrity is perfectly fine.
Yeah, C's get degrees.
All right, so this ties back into a little bit with the diabetes podcast.
Right.
Because growing up, I always wanted to be in the military.
Yes.
Like, grew up around the military, have military in my family background and stuff, and so I always wanted to do military, but Type 1 diabetes disqualifies you.
Yes.
So really, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I had graduated high school, taken like those dual credit programs. So my last 2 years of high school was almost just college. Like, most of the classes I took were the dual credit classes at community college. So I just went straight from, you know, high school into community college. Basically, the only thing that changed was my course load. I went from more of like a partial course load to a full-time student. And for a couple of reasons. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but also at that time, to be able to stay on my family's insurance, I had to be a full-time student.
Gotcha.
So... And everyone, you know, it was that time where everyone's like, well, you know, if you want a job, you got to go to college. You know, you got to get a 4-year degree to do anything with yourself. Or otherwise, you'll end up, you know, like washing dishes at a restaurant the rest of your life, you know, type mentality. So I was like, well, I guess I'm going to college. I don't know what I want to do because I couldn't do the military thing. So I went to community college, and I was just kind of like taking care of all my, you know, gen ed stuff. And at the same time, like, I'd been really involved in my youth group growing up. And so when I graduated, and I was like, you know, one of the student leaders in my youth group. And so they had asked me like, hey, do you want a job? Like, come to be an intern with the youth group at the church I was at, which was a big church, like probably 1,500 people. They also had a school. So the youth group was big as well. So they had an internship program for students in college. And so I was like, sure, like, it's a job. Why not? You know, do part-time. They'll help, you know, pay for some of the school. And so that was my first, like, real job outside of high school, like, just mowing lawns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was my first job. And I was, you know, a youth leader at a church. And so I did that for 3 years while I was going to school. And I had decided, because I like to stay physically active and stuff, I wasn't one that would, like, I couldn't work an office job. I couldn't be like a, you know, an accountant or something. Like, it would drive me insane.
Yeah.
So I was like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was good at math, but I hated math. So I was like, maybe something in like engineering and stuff, but I was like, I hate math. Even though I was pretty good at it. And so I really didn't know. But I liked being physically active, wanted to do the military stuff. So I ended up starting my degree in kinesiology, which is exercise science. Snap.
I never knew that.
Yeah. So I was going to do exercise science. And
you get to work with that funky tape on people?
Yeah, the KT nice. Tape and stuff. And I was like, well, I'll just go be like an athletic trainer or personal trainer or sports medicine. I don't know. I was like,
you'd be an athletic supporter.
Yeah. I was like, you know, I'll just do that. And it was fun. Like, some of my classes, like, I got to take like a weight training class, you know.
You just lift weights?
Yeah, you lifted weight. Well, and it's not just like lifting weights, but it's talking about like programming and how to program workouts. Like, I enjoyed kind of like all the biology classes, like anatomy and physiology. Mm-hmm. Motor learning was a super cool class because it talks about like how your body actually develops and learns different motor functions from like adolescence, like childhood and adolescence to adulthood. So like, we had to come up with tests and different experiments on like how to test certain like motor systems. Like, one of them we were doing was your vestibular system, which is inner ear, all your balance and stuff. And testing like head position will actually like change your balance. So we did one like stepping over an obstacle, normal head position, eyes open, and you do it like normal head position but eyes closed. Then you do it head positioned back, eyes open, head positioned back, eyes closed. And the eyes open or closed didn't have as big an influence on like getting over the obstacle as your actual head position of like either straight and normal or like tilted back, because it affects your balance and stuff. So it's kind of interesting stuff like that that I thought was cool. And so then, so I was going through that and I was working at the church and still didn't really like, I kind of picked that as my path, but I wasn't like, yeah, sold on it.
There's no passion behind it.
Yeah, it was just like, this is something I could do. Also, really quick side note, college professors are super hit or miss.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Like,
you have a college professor right now who's horrible.
You have to use what's called Rate My Professor.
Yeah.
Yep. You need to use that. Like, I can't advocate for that enough, because you take a college course and you go in thinking, I'll be fine. And if the professor is garbage, that class is going to suck.
Yep.
And you might not learn anything, and you might fail the class, and that's money out of your pocket. So you got to, you know, take the lump from people who did it before and say, okay, listen, this guy sucks. This guy's really great. They're easy grader. They're a hard grader, whatever. If you don't have that, like, it can totally reinvent your college experience, yeah, for sure.
My current professor has a one-star average rating on Rate My Professor.
Yikes.
And it shows.
And you're like, I understand why.
Is that because you're homeschooled?
I wasn't homeschooled, remember? I was home goof off for a year.
Well, because, like, for instance, I had a chemistry professor, which, one, I just was never all that great at chemistry to begin with. And then when I went in and did chemistry in college, the professor, one, he was like 80-something years old. And so it was like, you know, one of those like hour-and-a-half blocks. And I think we never went over like 45 minutes, which you would think would be cool. Most college kids would be like, yeah, like we get out early. But the fact was, we got out early because he didn't teach anything. And he would like start talking about something and then kind of trail off and be like, ah, you guys get it. And I'm sitting there like trying to pass this class. I'm like, no, I do not. I do not get it.
Because the test would have all the material that you didn't really cover.
But he didn't cover it because he was old and tired and would let us out early and not cover like half the material. So I'm like reading through the textbook trying to teach myself just to like pass this class. So
did you pass the class?
I did. Right. I got a B.
There you go.
Which I think is actually pretty good considering I kind of had to teach myself, and I still don't know anything about chemistry. Covalent bonds.
Mole.
Yeah.
I know there's a term, mole. I used to write chemistry formulas on my stomach and sit in the back of the class and look at them, and I still almost failed chemistry.
It's probably because you were writing it on your stomach.
Right.
Joe is...
How did you like cheat during the test?
I was checking my insulin pump.
Oh, that's next level. Just listen. That's abuse of your disability.
No, if I have diabetes, so much bad has happened to me because of diabetes. I'm gonna use it when I can.
So then I had some negative things happen in my life. Like I had a friend who took their own life, and I was just in a really bad spot, and didn't have motivation or anything for school or what I wanted to do. So I ended up making the decision to go do an internship at the International House of Prayer, which is kind of where I was going to go, like, you know, kind of get recentered, kind of take a break from things, focus, and figure out my next step. Ironically enough, that's also where I met my wife.
Ooh. Come on.
So I went and did the internship, and I'd already been working for the church, and I hadn't been like, I didn't really want to be a pastor, but then I went and did the internship, and I was like, you know what, I don't know if I would do the pastor route, but I kind of want to sit, because they have a Bible college there, and I was like, but I kind of want to stick around and do some like study. And so they had different programs. Like you could do like a little like 2-year just like general Bible college study thing, you know. So that was initially my plan. I got into it and started going to the Bible college. And while I was there, I started working security for the International House of Prayer. And it was like actual security job. It wasn't like mall cop. Like we were armed, trained security. We did security for, you know, the Bible University, for the campus, for the church, for the House of Prayer, all that. And they have like this apartment complex. It's basically like their dorms, their intern dorms and stuff like that. So fairly involved in security. And that was my first kind of like dip in the water for law enforcement. And so I was going to Bible college. And I actually really enjoyed it. There's a lot of really cool stuff. Very insightful, like learning things like when you study the Bible, doing like an exegetical study or an eisegetical, like reading.
I don't know what those words mean.
It's like internal, external?
Yeah. So it's like
you can just say that.
Because that's not the term.
Why?
I'm trying to sound smart.
He's educated.
I'm using the terms.
Do they mean the same thing?
No. So exegetical is going into it with like this, without any preconceived notions or taking stuff from the text. Eisegetical is more like reading into the text what you are kind of wanting to. So like if you do an exegetical study on, say, a chapter or a book of the Bible, like you're going to take it, you're going to read what it says, like the literal, like, hey, this is what it says. You're going to look at the original language of what it said. Then you're going to look at the historical setting surrounding it, of where it was written, who wrote it, what area did they live in, what time period did they live in, the historical relevancy, and then who were they writing it to. So like some of Paul's letters, and you look at, okay, some of the things he said, which is also interesting when you start doing real study, because a lot of verses get taken out of context because people don't understand the historical context or the audience context. Like when he's writing to a specific church, there were things that he said that pertained specifically to that church and what was going on in that.
Okay. I get it. Yeah. So there is a difference between the words. I'm sorry, I should never have asked. You can continue your story.
Oh.
That good enough degree wasn't good enough.
So like there was some cool stuff that I learned. And then I got into, because from working security and stuff, I really was enjoying it and started kind of thinking that plan of like going into law enforcement. So I was like, okay, how does that work with, I'm in Bible college now. But they did have what they called the social justice program, which was the goal of the program was to look at social justice issues from a biblical context and biblical perspective, with the intent of finding biblical solutions, you know, like, so I was doing that program, which I actually also really enjoyed because I feel like it just gives you a good perspective compared to all the narrative we hear nowadays from like the media and stuff on both sides. Like it gives a much more interesting perspective on things. At the same time, I was working and trying to get on with the police department. So oddly enough, I was in my junior year, halfway through my junior year at, actually I was halfway through my junior year, both times, halfway through my junior year in kinesiology when I left to do the internship. I was halfway through my junior year at, Bible college when the college actually, because of different stuff with the leadership of the program and the faculty, and some stuff, like some falling outs they had and stuff, they actually ended up just canceling the program. So I'm like halfway through my junior year and they're like, well, so they were like, we can transfer you to, you know, a different program, but I wasn't really into them. So I was like, well, I guess I'll just, you know, take the L and keep on going. And so, well, not keep on going with Bible college, but
keep on going with life.
Yeah. And so that's actually when I ended up getting on with the police department. So right, I went through the academy and did 7 months in the academy, which is all, you know.
Is it like 7 months, 9 to 5, or like 24/7?
So it's 7 months, 9 to 5, more like.
Do you
so
live there? I don't know how it works. No,
it wasn't a live-in academy.
Okay.
But, oh. I was like, you looked like you were getting up. Oh, you were no. Like,
he was getting ready to draw down.
No, I'm just leaning into the story.
So it was like 6 a.m. to like 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. So, and that was also, I mean, it wasn't like, it was cool. It was fun. It wasn't like academically super challenging, but there was a lot of stuff because you have to study constitutional law, stat law, you know, case law. And so I found that really interesting. And there's certain, you know, like case law that if you're a cop, you got to know like the back of your hand.
Miranda versus Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Terry v. Ohio.
Yes.
You know, like, so there's a lot of this case law that you got to know because it really dictates how you do what you do. Right. You know? So some people that are like, ah, cops are just dumb. They're too dumb to do anything else. So they go get a job so they can go beat people up. Like, no, like you don't have to be a genius, but you do have to have a brain to,
and you have to understand procedure.
Right. Like, yeah. So it's not a mindless job. Like you have to understand a lot of stuff. And honestly, I would say not just the academic part, but the critical thinking part.
And it's emotional intelligence too, yeah. Right? Because it's not like you're reading these cases and reading these procedures and policies and then just going and applying it in, under a regular situation. It's like you need to go do this while under high pressure and high stress, while keeping the procedure and policy in the forefront, while also keeping yourself safe, your partner safe, and the public safe.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely a certain level of emotional intelligence that I think people don't necessarily think about all the time.
Yeah. And having to make some of those decisions that are determined by case law and that can be looked back and studied for years on end. And you're making some decisions sometimes in fractions of a second. And they're like, well, but did you think of this case law or that case law? And how did you apply this? And you're like, I was trying not to get shot, you know? So it's very interesting. And that is one of the things I feel like, the critical thinking aspect is huge because it's not just taking information on a page and going, you know, if A plus B equals this, then, you know, C is whatever. Like, it's a lot more dynamic than that because, you know, you're walking up on a car stop and you've got to be reading all these different signs and body language and all sorts of different stuff to be able to, you know how to respond and react to things. So it's very complex and complicated. And I think that people don't give as much credit for the amount of critical thinking it actually takes to do the job. But I found that fun and
for, I should hope so. You did it for a long time.
Yeah, I did it for 6 years. So my first couple years, like, was the real fun part because that was also pre-George Floyd, pre-riots, all that stuff, the first few years. And, you know, you're out there doing policing, feeling like you're, you know, actually making a difference, helping people, and you're getting into, you know, chasing bad guys, car chases and stuff like that, and getting to, you know, put cases together and see something come of it. And then honestly, all that changed after 2020. Like, it, one, just the manpower, like, we can probably go into this in another episode or something if we ever want to do a law enforcement one, but it drastically changed. I mean, the manpower, like the shift that I worked when I first started, there were like 20 officers on a night for that shift for my district that I worked. Mm-hmm. When I left, there was an average of 7.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. And the call volume increased, not decreased, you know.
So do the numbers, was it people transferring to different departments, precincts, or people just getting out of law enforcement?
Both.
Both.
Some people leaving the inner city, not wanting to work for the big department because nobody
big in city, the city, more crime.
Yeah.
More crime.
Big city, more crime. Work. And the politics, I mean, the politicians don't like you. They don't support you. They cut your funding. And
any interaction could literally end your life.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not physically, but just end your life as you know it.
Right.
Your job or financially.
Yeah. And with the climate, too, it was like, even if you do the right thing, if it's perceived or spun a certain way, exactly what you said, that could be the end of your career, the end of, you know, like,
your name.
Yeah. So
that's wild. And then
we 7. Also, yeah.
That's an average too. So it's not like, hey, it's 7 every night. It could be 2 one night and 9 the other night.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, and it's so it was, that's not, it 7. Was rough. And then also going from,
I didn't do math. I'm just saying.
The leadership.
We'll cut this part out.
That would be like, at certain points, the leadership. So I remember we had, and I'm not going to name any names, but we had a captain who told us, right, he's in charge of the entire shift, and he would go, he literally verbatim told us, he goes, well, I can't tell you to stop doing self-initiated, which self-initiated is right, like when you're trying to like go out and do your own investigations, find bad guys, do car stops, like do surveillance on, you know, gang houses, dope houses, things like that, so that you can build your own case, which honestly I think is some of the funnest part of law enforcement, because it's almost like a puzzle, right? Like you're trying to go and
you get
find
to
the bad guys and
use critical thinking, use your brain. You, like you said,
it's
I
not
can see how that would be.
Whereas like when you're responding to calls for service, which is the main priority, but that is solely reactionary, right? Something bad's happening and people are calling you to come help fix it. So you're already behind the curve reacting to a situation. But I had a captain go, you know, I'm not telling you, I can't tell you not to, but if I were y'all, I wouldn't do any self-initiated. Basically, to try the concept was, if we limit our contact with the public, it'll limit the chance of us having a bad encounter that'll end up on YouTube or the news, or, you know, basically.
So just make everything reactionary.
Yeah, which you're never going to solve the problem of crime if you're solely reactionary, because then you're already behind the curve. Yeah. So
that's like helping somebody after they had a cardiac arrest when you could have been helping them the year prior lose weight and make better life decisions. So they wouldn't have the cardiac arrest.
Yeah. So one was getting stressful because of that. And it just wasn't the same, especially, because of, just public reaction now is so, it's naturally aggressive now with the way that things have gone with the media, where like bad guys are always going to not like cops because.
Well, nobody wants to get caught, right?
Right. Yeah. And if you're a bad guy, like obviously you already know that we're the opposite, you know, the opposite side of the coin. But it got to a place where it's like, even just a normal citizen, if you're showing up on a call and contacting someone, their automatic response is aggressive and, you know, antagonistic because, oh, you're the police. So it was getting, I was already getting to the point where I was like, I don't want to do patrol anymore. Like, I don't know that this is worth it. Which is also why I processed for the tactical team. Which I passed, you know, I passed the process and, made it to, you know, basically the wait list. So you make the pool and then they can pick guys from the pool to come to the teams. But the other thing with, all the stuff with the riots and all that stuff, which that's a whole other story, the riots, but because we were so low staffed, I got picked and my transfer got denied because we were too low staffed in the field. So it was one of those where I'm already like ready to get out of this one spot. I'm wanting a change and then it gets denied. And so we're sitting there and you're like ready to go do something different, right? You're ready to, you know, something that I was passionate about, and you're just stuck in the place where you can't move. And so it was just sitting there like day in and day out going like, come on, when's my transfer going to go through? When are they going to? And it was another year and a half. I was sitting there and just getting burnt out because it's, you know, we only kept on losing people. But also during that time, I also became an FTO, a field training officer. So as recruits were coming out of the academy, I was training them for their first 3 months out in the field. They're with an FTO to get like on the job, hands-on training, which I actually really enjoyed that. I'm glad I did that. I enjoyed teaching. And so it was one of those two where I felt like, hey, at least I can do something positive by passing on my knowledge to, you know, other officers. So I did that, and I had four recruits that I've trained. And then I ended up reconnecting with my wife. Ooh. And we started talking, started dating long distance. And that's when I started considering, you know, trying to figure out, okay, do I stay there in Kansas City? Do I move up here to New York? What, you know? And so there was a lot of back and forth, and we were trying to figure it out. And I honestly was getting really burnt out with the PD and had already been considering like maybe trying to switch departments. And at the time, right, I didn't have any formal education on paper, right? I didn't have that piece of paper. So I very much so felt kind of like, well, I'm stuck. Like I can go, you know,
like I have no other options.
Yeah. I can go wait tables, but you know, what else am I going to do?
Right.
You know, and then of course I was like contacting people like departments up here in New York State, which is also frustrating because I have a lot of certifications through the PD. I have a lot of,
not for New York. You don't.
I have a lot of different trainings, different skill sets. And New York State doesn't care about any of them. If it is not a certification through the state of New York, it means nothing to them.
So you have to start over like from scratch.
Yep. So if I went into law enforcement here in New York, I would have to start over from scratch, go through the academy again, start from the very bottom again. Like,
wow.
They don't give you any credit, not even like time on credit, you know, nothing for experience. It's just
That's crazy to me.
Yeah. It's just, nope. Means nothing.
And that's just a New York thing. So
yeah, you could, it's a state thing.
You could theoretically transfer to, say, Jersey or another state.
Ew, don't go to New Jersey. And
Vermont. Vermont. Okay, everyone's nice there.
Yeah. Well, and like I had buddies that left our department and went to do PD in other states. And the fact that they called and had experience, right, in a large metropolitan city, in a big regional academy that's, you know, nationally recognized, some of these other departments really didn't even put them through a hiring process. They were like, oh, you've got like 5 years experience with KCPD. You went through. Absolutely. When do you want to start? You know,
wow.
Whereas New York, I called, email, I spoke to so many departments and they were like, we'd love to have you. But the state law, won't let us, like, you have to start over. So, yeah. And so I was like,
that's so stupid.
Right.
Cause yeah. Like, talk about shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, yeah. Cause you talked a second ago about how, you know, there's nobody coming into the force. Mm-hmm. People are leaving the force. So the numbers are dwindling. So if you have people who are actively trying to join your department, why would you then preclude them for reasons? You know,
right. Like,
it just seems really stupid.
Yeah. So I honestly was getting really frustrated and really burnt out. And like me and Angelie were praying about it and stuff and just trying to figure out where we wanted to end up. And we ended up deciding and feeling like this is where we were supposed to be. So I actually, it was kind of one of those things taking that like first step. Cause I spent several months like trying to figure out a way to get a job up here and stuff. And my wife, and we felt like the Lord had led us like, hey, come settle up here. And so I was kind of like still doing the work thing and trying all this stuff to figure out what to do. And I had thought about like, hey, maybe go back to school and do some, but it's hard when you're, you know, to all of a sudden like quit a job, start school over again. And it's, you know, it's really challenging.
Yes, it is.
As you know better than I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so trying to figure out what to do, and especially because like I still didn't have anything that I'm like, man, I really want to go to school for this, you know, like trying to be like, well, what would I do? So eventually my wife, fiance at the time, was like, so when are you going to like just kind of take the leap and do what we feel like the Lord told us we're supposed to do? And when are you just going to, you know, actually take a step
let's go.
And figure it out. And so I was like, okay, you're right. And it's funny because pretty much the same week that she did that, and I was like, all right, and I put a timeline, like, this is when I'm leaving to move. That's when my transfer went through. Like, literally, oh my the same gosh. Week.
No.
And I get a call one day like, oh, hey, yeah, your transfer went through. You're coming to the tag team. This was a Monday night, and they're like, yeah, you're coming to the tag team. We'll see you Wednesday. And I was like,
oh, my God.
What? Okay. But even then, it was like I'd already kind of, you know, made my decision. And so when I got the transfer and met with the new unit, I told them, I was like, you know, I'm looking at moving. So this is probably what's going to happen. And they were like, okay, well, we'll take you while we got you. Cause they were short staffed. Everyone is absolutely abysmally short staffed. So I did that for 3 months and then moved up here and just kind of took that leap of faith to go.
Did you enjoy your 3 months?
I did. I really, because I enjoy the tactical side of things. Like, again, it's that critical thinking. Like, when you're moving through a building, like, you know, looking at your different angles and stuff and how to solve the problem of clearing this, you know, building or this room or this structure. Like, it's really interesting. Because it's not just like, you know, kick a door and run into a room. Like,
right. It's not Call of Duty.
Yeah. It's
very... You can't throw flashbangs everywhere.
Right. I mean, we do.
Right.
We did throw like, flashbangs. But yeah, it's not just like, nade out, you know.
Yeah.
And like run in, guns blazing, you know.
You can't Leroy Jenkins it in the real world.
And so, it, you know, it was super cool. And I still find it fascinating just all the – and I got to learn a lot even in that 3 months because I went right through our SWAT school. And then they were – my unit was teaching a advanced SWAT for regional school. So while I didn't technically go through the school, I was there assisting my unit while they're teaching it. So I essentially got to go through SWAT and then advanced SWAT. And so there's a lot of like real cool stuff I got to learn.
And New York still said no.
And New York is like, no thanks.
But all that led you to a job that you have now, which from what I understand, you are safer doing.
Yes.
And can still make a livelihood off of
and
without going into debt of school
is going to pay for my schooling
and is
yeah
okay so what are fill me in here what are we doing
so I got here and I call him my brother-in-law like twice removed because he's my brother-in-law's brother-in-law like my brother-in-law married his wife's sister. So we're like, yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
That family tree is wild.
Family math. Yeah.
I got you. It's like family vines. Really.
Yeah. And so he...
Family vines. I like that.
He works for an electric company. Actually, the third largest electric company here in the capital region. And I had been like trying to think about jobs. And at that point, I was like, you know what? Whatever. I'll work anywhere. Like, if I got to wait tables, like if I got to wash dishes, I'll wash it, you know? But someone had mentioned like, hey, have you talked to Jason? Like maybe, you know, maybe he can help you out. And so I did, he got me in contact with, his boss and I ended up meeting with him and he was like, we had a great interview and he was like, sure. And you know, he didn't require any experience. He's like, you know, if you've got zero experience, we'll still take you and train you. Like, you know, as long as you've got two brain cells to rub together and, you know, are not completely, you know, dumb and you can learn, then we'll take you and we'll train you.
Yeah.
And, the other thing is if you, you know, there was like a probationary period where you had to show, right, that you can work hard and you can, you know, learn enough to actually do the job. And once you get past that, if you stay with the company for a year, they will, you can apply for their apprenticeship. So if you get into the apprenticeship, they will pay your way through school to get an electrical degree. Like, it's through the community college, but it's like a trade school, right? Mm-hmm. To get that certification, they'll pay your way through it and pay you while you're doing it and give you the apprenticeship.
Wow.
And so when I started doing it and I was looking at it and I enjoyed it because it's still like working with my hands. It's still a physical job because it's not like, it's not just doing like little residential like houses. It's a commercial. So we're doing things from like factories and power plants to doing huge apartment complex. Like right now, my job site is the new dorms that they're building for University of Albany. You see that?
Yeah, yeah.
You can see from I-90. Yep, yep. Yeah. So that's my job site.
That's cool.
Where I'm working now. Or I worked at a place that did like solar stuff. So it's not just like, oh, sitting there wiring outlets. Like you're doing a lot, basically anything and everything. It's pretty cool. And I like learning it because one, it's, you know, it's physical, but at the same time, it's almost like a puzzle, right? I'm not just like moving rocks from here to there. Like you still have to have a brain and think about things while you're doing it. As you're like wiring up different things, you got to know what goes where and, you know, ampage for things so that you know like what gauge wire to use for this or that, you know. So I don't know. I enjoy it. So currently, I'm not eligible yet to apply for the apprenticeship, but once I am, I'm going to apply, and that's my goal, is to go to school and get the certifications for that and do electrical work.
So the cop life is done.
That door's closed. As of right now, you know, I'm still young enough that I'm not closing the, you know, I'm not shutting it out completely, but I don't have any plans of pursuing it at the moment. I'm planning on pursuing this because one, so I've been there 8 months now, and after 8 months with this electric company, I'm only making $2 less than I was after 6 years with the police department.
Wow, what a shame.
Yeah,
it's terrible. I mean, it's good for you, but like,
yeah,
and the concept is like terrible.
It's not like, you know, I'm getting paid buku bucks here. Like, I'm getting paid a good wage for the electrical work, but that's more of an indictment of
how much you're not going to get.
Yeah,
the cop.
Yeah, the police force and how little they get paid.
I think if you shaved your beard and left the mustache, you should be a U.S. Marshal.
I may or may not have a picture somewhere of me with just a mustache.
Yes,
when I was a cop, because we, you know, we had to be clean shaven, and so we would do like No Shave November. We would do the mustache. I don't look great with a mustache.
I mean, not many people do. Yeah,
very few people can pull it off.
I think it's just Tom Selleck and Burt Reynolds, really.
Yeah. Mm. So that's where I'm at, and I'm interested to see where the electrical work takes me. Plus, the schedule, oh my gosh. I went from overnights on a rolling schedule with the PD to when I was in TAC for 3 months. It's a 3-week rolling schedule from like days to PMs to overnights on call and all sorts of stuff. To now, I have a set schedule where I get weekends off Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Like, and even just that alone, I feel like I'm getting too spoiled to go back into. Because if I started over again with the police force, I'd go right back to nights, go right back to, you know, crazy schedule, and
it's a real thing. I mean, my job, which we'll get into maybe some other time, but 7 years at the hospital, I mean, it was a set schedule Monday through Friday, but you didn't have to take call shifts and whatnot. And it's no secret to anybody who knew me that I absolutely hated those.
Yeah.
But so just the fact that I know that, like, once I go into work at 8 a.m. at my new job, I'm leaving at 4:30, and there's no chance that somebody's going to call me and be like, you have to come back. Or I'm not going to get to work and be like, so-and-so called out. So we got to draw straws to see who can cover their call shift. I just go in and do whatever it is I do, and then I leave, and I smile the whole time.
It's such a weird, I guess, thought process, because you said for 6 years you did the same thing. You know, for 7 years you did the same thing. You know, at the restaurant, same thing for me. It was like that rolling schedule for 12 years. Mm-hmm. Now it's like I go to work at 8 in the morning. I leave at 4 o'clock. I'm home at 5:30. I have the whole night to myself. I'm off on the weekends. I'm off on the holidays. It's like that. It's so weird.
Yeah.
You know, like the transition going from just having zero life and zero control over anything. Suddenly you're like, yeah, I'm free Wednesday night at 7:30. You know, like, hey, it's Saturday. You want to go out on the boat? Yeah, sure. I'm off until Monday.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. Even this past 4th of July, it was like I was off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And it was like, before, I would need to like request days off, cash in like paid time off and sick days to maybe get 4 days off in a row. And I would need to beg, borrow, and plead to get that to happen.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you know, this is regular life. You know, talk about my life, your life together. Like, I would never see you. Like, you and your life,
kidding.
I had my life. We're never together. Like, I'll FaceTime you from the office. You know, maybe I'll see you on the way home. I'll kiss you goodnight, whatever. It's like, that's real life, you know, and I think part of the message and theme of just like this conversation is like, how do you, you know, provide for your family, but also have a social life and have that part of your life really, I guess, benefit from your work, right? Because it's like, you don't want to go to work just to work your entire life away.
Right.
Like, your work should supplement your life, right? Like, it should really be, it's the motivator, right? Like, you get to see your friends and family. It's like, that's why you go to work, right? But you want to be able to enjoy those friends and family and your dogs and go for walks and hiking and all the things that you love to do.
Yeah.
But you can't do all that if you're constantly at work.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. I think too many people get so caught up in that mindset of, I need to go to work. I need to hustle. I got to hustle. It's like, yeah, there's hustling, but to what point, you know, and at what cost?
So that you can retire and live your life when you're 65?
Right. And listen, nothing wrong with that per se, but why can't you have both right now?
Yeah.
You know, if you make good choices in a financially, you know, especially even who you marry, right? And we said, you talked about getting married earlier. It's like, if you, even who you marry is important. You know, if they have, you know, wild spending habits, and you do too, you know, we're going to have some problems, you know, but it all comes down to, again, just having that, the wherewithal to think ahead, right? And to be able to enjoy your life, you know, and live in the moment.
Yeah.
You know,
that's good.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Appreciate that.
That was good. It was just keep going.
I can keep going if you want me to.
No, maybe another time.
Oh, okay.
That was good though. No, but I mean, I had a thought, but I lost it at some point in that marvelous spiel.
I'm just saying, you know, because, and this is a serious.
No,
it's a serious thing because, you know, we're told from a young age, go to college at 18.
Yep.
Work 9 to 5.
Yep.
40 years goes by, you're 65, you retire 401k.
Yep.
Maybe you buy a house, you know, in, you know, North Florida somewhere, in a little cracker box.
Please don't do that.
Maybe see your grandkids, and then you die.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you just worked your whole life away.
And listen, to a certain degree, there are people who have to do those things. Like cops, there are people who have to do those jobs. Nurses, we need those things for society to run. However, I think it's a disservice to tell our kids, especially from the educational point, where it's like, all right, you must go do this at 18. At 18 years old, you don't know jack shit about anything.
That's absolutely true.
I have patients, and even at the hospital, I had younger patients, and even now I still have like teenagers, 20s and stuff, and I talk to them. And I'm like, what do you want to do? They're like, I just don't know. And there's like this depression over them that they don't know.
Wait.
And I was like, just so you know, I'm 30 years old and I just went back to school. I love it. I don't even know if I'm going to, once I graduate, if I'm going to do that for forever. It's just a part of my life that I feel compelled to do right now. Because I don't know what I'm 30. I don't know what my life's going to look like when I'm 40, when I'm 50. Like,
which I feel like is another kind of societal shift from like generation before us to our generation. Is the generation before us and multiple, it was like you got a job and you stayed in that job until you retired.
Yes.
Like, whereas our generation tends to do these shifts, which some people are like, oh, that's like irresponsible. But no, I think it's healthy. Then you don't, you know, I think it's healthy to recognize like, hey, I'm not passionate about this either anymore, or I'm going in a new direction where I can invest myself and be passionate about something. And maybe that's actually a healthy move. Maybe it's a healthy change. Now there is, you know, the other side where it could be like, you just have follow through and commitment issues. But like, I think recognizing like, hey, if I'm burnt out at this, or this is not like fulfilling for me or healthy for my lifestyle, for what I want from life. Like, for instance, myself, when once I got married, I was like, no, I want to focus on my family, not my career. And it's very, yeah. it's very difficult to do in law enforcement, is to have a healthy family life. That kind of helped me go, okay, no, I'm looking more at what's beneficial for my family over, you know, like making money or anything like that. Although my new job, I will probably end up making more than I would ever would have in the PD. But I don't think it's a bad shift to know, like, or a bad thing to make these shifts, especially when you're, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Like, it's never too late.
But that thought process comes from a place of maturity, right? Like, you're 18, you don't know anything about anything, and you're telling these kids to go make these choices.
Yeah.
While also putting that societal pressure on them to do this thing. It needs to be the right choice. It needs to make a lot of money, and you can do it forever.
Yeah.
And so then these young kids were like, hey, go take out these crazy loans. Go put yourself in debt. Start from a place of failure. Like, you're starting in the red. So they go to college. You know, they come out with $80,000 in debt. They either don't use the degree, or the ROI on the degree is not enough to pay for their life. So they're working, you know, one, two jobs, or working that job that they have just at crazy hours to just pay off the student loans, buy the house, take care of the dog, maybe go on vacation once a year. And then we wonder why the kids are growing up and becoming just depressed, full of anxiety, miserable. It's like, well, maybe when you're 18, maybe you don't need to go to college right away.
Nope.
Maybe you don't go to college at all. You're in a trade right now, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you have to go to college for that per se, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, go do an apprenticeship. Go join the military. Go work in a restaurant for 4 years. I don't care. Go travel. Go do something to figure out what you want.
Yeah.
What you like. What speaks to you.
Yeah. Right?
Because you don't know that at 18. At 18, you spent the first, you know, 18 years of your life being told what to do. Literally. Like, you raise your hand. Can I go to the bathroom in class? You know, and then suddenly the next day, literally, oh, you graduated. What do you want to do? Go figure it out. Whatever you want to do, you choose. It's like, I don't know. You tell them what to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've literally been telling these kids what to do for their whole life. And now you're literally doing them a disservice by saying, you figure it out.
Yep.
And if you pick the wrong thing, oh, you're screwed.
Yeah. And I mean, like, even if you go right from high school, like, let's say you absolutely know you want to, like, you were born to be a doctor, sure. Let's say you go from high school to college through all that. By the time you're, like, working as a resident or whatever, like, unless you've had a tangible amount of time in other work, like, you're not going to even know how to deal with a good work environment, a bad work environment, good people or bad people. Like, after high school, like, take a year off. Work in customer service. Everybody should have to do at least a year in customer service.
Absolutely.
Because you'll learn more about yourself. You'll learn more about yourself. You'll learn more about society. And
other how people. to deal with conflict.
Exactly. Like,
yeah.
You don't teach those skills on a blackboard in a classroom.
No.
Even from hearing people's stories. Like,
yeah.
The amount of stuff all three of us have encountered, we could probably write volumes that rival the encyclopedia in terms of.
But entertaining though, like Harry Potter, you know, it's like,
yeah,
like the things that you see, like in a restaurant, you know, in healthcare, as a cop, you know, you're like, people did what?
Yep.
What? You know, it blows your mind that people behave the way they do sometimes. But to your point, Zach, it's like you can't learn that, you know, like in a classroom. It has to be experienced. And, you know, if you're out at 18 of high school, at 18, you're out of high school and you're like, okay, I'm going to go work in a restaurant, or go in the military, whatever. That's going to teach you those things. So that way, when you're 23, 24, 25, you're like, okay, well, here's what I've learned from my life experience. Here's who I actually am as a person, as an adult. I've taken some licks here and there. Now I want to go do this thing. Mm-hmm. And even that thing, maybe you don't do it forever. Like you said, maybe you're doing school right now, Zach, and you're like, yeah, well, maybe in 5 years I'm going to do something else. That's also okay. As long as you're taking care of your family and your finances, it shouldn't really matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
As long as it's legal. No, not rude, crude, and decent, you know? But it's like, who cares? Like, go do something else. Why not?
Ideally, I pay my bills with this podcast eventually, but for now, I'll stay in school and keep my job to keep bread on my table and insulin in my fridge.
Like, subscribe.
Share with your friends.
So Zach can pay his bills.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to exclusively share with friends. Just share it with everybody. Just because they're not your friends doesn't mean they can't be my friends.
Because we all want to be friends, right? Yeah. My life, your life.
Together.
This is working out fantastic. Well, thank you for listening to, I guess we'll say part two. I don't know
if it'll be part one or part two. Is there going to be a part three for
Zach? Will be eventually.
Yeah, we only hear your story.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I can share my story eventually. But for now, thank you for listening to part two, a little bit of Zach Jenkins' background, and then really good life advice by all of us, but mostly Joe at the tail end of this episode.
He's old, one of the old and crusty.
Old and crusty.
With
and
age
wise.
Comes wisdom.
Yes.
And if I can help impart that from my life to your life, I'm here for it.
Beautiful.
Together.
But yeah, like, subscribe, keep up to date, and we will see you next time. Thank you, guys.